Well, how about this? First he was on, then he was off. Now he's back on. That's the good news. Michael Harrison is here after all. Hello there, sir.
Well, thank you for having me after all that confusion. I apologize if I caused you or the listeners any inconvenience. It's just it's been a crazy day for me.
If I caused you any pain. No, it was fine. Anything to accommodate.
Paul McCartney, you just quoted.
You remember him, huh?
Not only I remember him, you set off a tidal wave of interesting conversation on the programs I sat in on this since the time you and I had that little up and
back. Why, you've been repeating my negative comments about
Paul
McCartney?
No, people thought that sparked controversy all over Connecticut, USA, and then some.
So I've been thinking about it, too, because I think I didn't defend my position strongly enough when I insulted Paul McCartney's last 50 years or so of productivity.
Well, you've had a couple of weeks to think about it.
Yeah, so, you know, he's worse than I let on.
I don't even have to debate you on this. You're just, you have the rope, now jump off the cliff.
He's all ego. He's just.
He has the right to have ego. He's the greatest musician living today.
He does, but it's sad. So we talked about how hard it is. We have talked before about how hard it is to maintain what you're doing. You have to be willing to put yourself on the line if you want to be an artist who keeps being relevant. And it's a really hard thing for people to do. Most artists have a few years of brilliance that makes them a star, and then they can't ever do it again.
Let me tell you something. McCartney's accomplishments post-Beatles is more than most musicians could ever dream of, and this was already after the Beatles. But let me just say one thing to put it in perspective, because nobody could win a discussion about something that's subjective, like how great or not great is an artist. But we are in a new era now when it comes to the Beatles. They're so far in the past that the whole thing about the tension between Lennon and McCartney and whether Yoko was bad or McCartney was too egotistical or Lennon was creepy, all that stuff doesn't matter anymore. All that matters is the sum total of their body of work and the impact it's had not only on a generation, but generations. The music of the Beatles is still alive.
Oh, absolutely. No,
so
they
McCartney,
are.
So
they were a brilliant combination, which is what makes it so interesting, his utter failure since then.
But it doesn't matter if he failed since then, because what he did then is still bigger today than most things that are now.
But I'm not trying to degrade the Beatles' accomplishments at all. I find it curious in general that artists have this inability to sustain. Like a few years ago, Bob Dylan was interviewed on 60 Minutes, and they said, "Can you still write songs like this?" And he says, "No, nobody can write songs like that anymore."
Yeah. Do you remember the movie about the baseball player that was very controversial from the old days? And Tommy Lee Jones played him in a movie recently. Ty Cobb. And Ty Cobb was an old man, and they were interviewing him. It was played by Tommy Lee Jones, and they said, "Ty, if you were playing today, what do you think your batting average would be?" And he said, "Probably about 270. Only 270? He said, "Well, hell, I'm 73 years old." and that's sort of the way I look at McCartney. I'm just in awe of McCartney, of his intelligence, of his coolness, of how he handles being McCartney, of the fact that he still makes pretty good music, that he's
What? That's the only thing I'm insulting him on, being dumb and writing lousy music for the last 40 years. There is no sign of intellect in the man.
No sign of intellect.
I've been going back since I got Alexa. I have my smart speaker, and you can just say, "Alexa, play Band on the Run," and you get to listen to Band on the Run. So I'm listening to old stuff that I don't get to hear usually because I don't have those things. And suddenly everything's available for free. It's the most wonderful thing.
I've been
listening to some of his old stuff. And I used to think when I was, 14 when McCartney came out or whatever I was, his first solo album. I was in awe of it. I thought it was an amazing album. He played every instrument. And I went back and listened to it, and there's hardly After you get past the top three songs, there's hardly a listenable track on the thing. I was shocked. And then you go to Band on the Run, which, you know, that's where he did his selling of albums after he, after post-Beatles with Wings. And it's, you know, it's good pop music, but it's garbage compared to what he did with Lennon. And so you start to understand that, okay, there's this dynamic that happened with Paul McCartney and John Lennon, which we've always known about. But if you just look at him without Lennon, you see that there's not enough depth there.
Many of the songs that he wrote with Lennon, he wrote without Lennon. One of the ironies of it was that they inspired each other to compete with each other, and very few of their songs did they both actually write.
Well, I think that's true, but I think even in that context, there were times where they would be pushing each other or putting in their own additions to the song.
Mm-hmm. So did I tell you about this new movie that's coming out next summer?
No.
Called Yesterday?
I don't think you did.
It's fantastic. The premise alone gives me chills.
Oh, good. What's the premise?
It's called Yesterday, and it's a story about this electrical burnout for like 5 minutes. The entire world grid goes down, and this fellow...
Oh, yes. I've read this. It's wonderful. Go ahead. Tell the story.
So this fellow is riding on his bike. He's a musician who's very unsuccessful, but he has a nice voice. He sounds kind of like Paul McCartney, but he's just going nowhere with his career. And the lights go out. He's driving on his bike. He runs into a pole. He falls on the ground. He blacks out. He wakes up in the hospital a couple of days later, and he doesn't remember, you know, what happened to me. They told him, and suddenly he finds out, he realizes that nobody in the world has ever heard of the Beatles.
Yeah, so I think you skipped over the electrical event. This is a worldwide event in which there's a huge power outage, and somehow everybody's memory is affected by it, and nobody realizes that the Beatles exist. He's out there singing their songs. He's the only one who knows the songs.
He's the only one who knows the songs. So he starts to play them and write them down. And they go, "You're a brilliant songwriter." And he's saying, "These are the Beatles songs." He wasn't trying to plagiarize. People say,
"What
are you talking about?"
But they didn't know what he was talking about.
And there's no record of them. He Googles them. This is from the trailer, man. This is,
is so compelling. I can't get over it.
Exactly. He becomes the world's most celebrated singer-songwriter. Yes. And the comments that are on the internet about this premise.
It's such a brilliant premise.
It's beyond brilliant. It's got me all excited. I can't wait to see the movie. I've watched the trailer 20 times.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, what they should do is just show the trailer in the movie theater and call it quits, because they did. There's no way the movie can equal the trailer.
You're absolutely right. First of all, most movies don't equal their trailer. Trailers are, you know, the sign of the times of attention deficit disorder. You see the whole movie in a trailer.
They tell you all the good parts, especially with the comedy, the three jokes that they've put in the 2 hours.
Right, or the explosions.
Yes, all the car
bang,
crashes.
Beam, the cars flying around, the buildings blowing up, guys flying in slow motion. But this premise is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I wish I had thought of.
And one of the great things about it is it will bring the generations together, as you alluded to. It's such old news, the Beatles, and it's so much a part of the fabric of society, no matter what generation you're of. You know all those songs.
Right. And what it underscores is how brilliant musically their body of work as songwriters and as players, as time goes by, it's brilliant music.
Yes, but the brilliance is timed to the times and is interacting with the changes going on in the culture. You don't know who's cause and what's effect. They're so interactive with each other.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. But I would never say that the Beatles are dated.
Not at all.
Mozart's not dated. The Beatles are not dated. I love Rodgers and Hammerstein, but it's dated. I love it. But it's dated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great dated. But there's
so
nothing...
Mozart can still rock?
Mozart is perfection. The Beatles are, except for the songs that I may not like or you may not like.
Like what?
But the There are songs. I don't want to get into all of
that.
No,
just name one.
Well, you and I don't like that Christmas song. I had somebody call up and argue with me.
That's McCartney, who can't write a decent song for 45 years.
Stop. Okay, stop. Listen to his new album. It's very nice.
I try.
I hate Octopus's Garden. I hate Yellow Submarine.
Oh, I think that stuff's fine. You know, it's novelty music.
I don't like some of the sitar stuff.
Yeah, the sitar
that
we could have done without.
I could probably pull 20 songs out of a bag.
But
and
what
say,
was
yeah.
that song with the sitar that Harrison did?
Within
about
you,
LA.
Without you. You know,
there's a house upon a hill.
I have to tell you, there probably are some Beatles songs I've never heard. There are songs I can't listen to. There are some pop songs that, I've heard the first 20 seconds and I'm gone. And
what kind of music program director were you, Michael?
I made rules that the DJs on my stations couldn't even listen to the tracks that were, we didn't have computers in those days.
Yep.
We would mark the albums. And I told them if they even listened to them when they're at home, they would be fired.
Wow.
I was Attila the Hun.
You were a tyrant. All right, I'm glad I got into your life when you were happy.
I'm a mellow laissez-faire guy.
All right, let's
take
a quick break. Michael Harrison is here. It's Friday on WTIC. Yeah, something going to happen. Come on, George.
And now here are the Beatles, guys and gals, inspired by Ravi Shankar and the Maharishi.
Oh, this is one of the songs you wouldn't let them listen to, I'll bet.
If they listened to this at home, they were fired. I had spies.
They might be suicidal. Yeah, the whole Indian thing was a little unfortunate, but...
I went to Bangladesh. I sat the concert for Bangladesh, the afternoon one at Madison Square Garden, sat in the second row. Ravi Shankar, after he performed, was sitting in the row in front of me with a little brownie camera taking pictures. And we had to sit through an entire 45-minute set of sitar music as the opening act. I thought I would shoot myself.
How many suicides took place?
About maybe four.
It's not so bad out of all those tens of thousands.
It's like, you know what I don't like? When you go to a concert of a great artist and they force you to watch an opening act of one of their friends that they're giving a break to, who sucks, but they don't realize it. Have you ever had that happen?
I haven't experienced that.
I have. I'm not going to get into names and all that, but I've experienced that syndrome.
Well, don't bring it up if you're not going to kiss and tell.
That's not the point. You know what I mean? We're going to go down an alley of artists and things, and I'm trying to avoid that. I mean,
no, I insulted your friend Paul. I went out on a limb. I know you take it personally.
I don't take it personally at all. I was thrilled by the fact that it had such resonance that I got so many calls about it from people, not to mention people brought it up to me in my life off the air. Hey, heard you and Feinberg talking about McCartney. And different opinions came out of that.
Did anybody agree with me or disagree?
No, not
in some
one person.
Way
everybody was congratulating me for decking you.
For
one
being
guy
correct
said,
for the first
one guy,
time.
One guy said, boy, it was really funny listening to Todd walking into a Harrison haymaker with his McCartney point.
That's funny.
And I don't even have a haymaker. Man, the last thing I like to do, I don't like to lose, but I really hate winning. I don't like debating. I would rather say to somebody, you made a great point and changed my mind, than to walk away, ha ha, I just won an argument with Todd Feinberg. The only places where you seek victory at the expense of truth is if you're a trial lawyer or if,
yes, but victory doesn't mean automatically that you did it at the expense of truth.
Oh, come on. Criminal lawyers are paid to seek victory at the expense of truth. I'm sorry, Judge, but I think you're right.
Talking about criminal law.
But there's two parts of society where it's okay to seek victory at the expense of truth, meaning to lie. One is to win. One of them is a criminal lawyer where that is their duty and that is actually for the cause of justice. And the other one is if you're in academic debating. In academic debating, you are told you should be able to win on either side of the argument.
Sure.
So those are two areas.
That's about developing skills.
Right. Skills to seek victory at the expense of truth.
In a truly just
enlightened society, they'd say you should never want to win unless you are on the side of the truth.
Well, it's unknown what the truth is in many conversations. What they want people to be able to do is to effectively advocate for the side they're on. That's a wonderful skill, so that truth can be found through debate.
I can't believe you're such a relativist. Sorry, I crack myself up with... Okay. So, what do you want to talk about today?
Well,
there's nothing happening in the world.
I do want to go over every... We did a little list back and forth. Let's start with Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams.
Because what's wrong kind with of a, this guy? Is he a schmendrick or what?
What is that? Is that a bad thing?
It ain't good.
What's a schmendrick about?
What does a schmendrick
Stacey
sound
Abrams?
Like? What is a schmendrick?
No, but what's wrong with
she's
Stacey
a nice?
Abrams?
She's a nice person. She's intelligent. Mm-hmm. She's articulate. She might someday be very presidential. But come on, that's pandering to identity politics.
But that's the business
lost.
They're in.
They're in the schmendrick business.
Yes, and they do that by doing identity politics.
And it's our obligation to point it out.
Yeah, but the whole thing is identity politics. That's what Democrats do as their way of life.
The Republicans, you're going to say which Republicans have done it, and then we're going to get into a left and right
debate. Republicans dabble, there's no doubt, but this is the whole dividing everybody up into pieces is the game plan for
the
Democrats.
The pendulum's gone too far in that direction.
Okay, but the whole campaign is built around, so far, appears that it's going to be built around identity politics.
Well, I think it was a terrible move. I think it's a terrible
move. Well, there's no move has been made. There's just a story in the news.
He said it or something. And I just think, look, I don't think Biden is going to make it to the finish line. I really
don't. You
don't
think he'll live that long, you mean?
Oh, God, I hope he does. He's a wonderful man. He's a lovely man. I just don't think that he's got the fire in the belly or the ability to carry off a presidential campaign and win.
All right, here's my analysis, which you may have heard before, and I apologize. If anybody who sees some little flickering light through the tunnel between them and the White House, they take a shot at it. If they see some way to get there today, the power is so immense. The ego trip is so huge. Politicians like all of these people who are considering a run are insufferable with their lust for being center of attention and being fawned over and having cameras pointed at them. And if they can do it, they will do it. If there is a way, and especially when there's going to be 20 people in the race, because then it's like you're at the roulette table. It's like you're buying a Powerball ticket. Sure, throw your $3 in, and maybe you'll be worth $1 billion at the
end of
the
night. Plus, you can also gather a large minority and go to the head of the pack without having to
really get
a lot of people.
If
that's
you have
the problem with fractured
politics. 22% of the vote or something.
Right. Well, yeah. That's how Hitler became chancellor. He won with a minority segment because the nation was so fragmented. You can come up with a really bad victor when you don't have some type of a plurality or some type of a majority that is somewhere near the 40 to 50, 60%.
Yes, it reduces everything down into this kind of politics where all you do is campaign to a particular base. So Joe Biden with a black woman who's credible, which Stacey Abrams I don't believe is. I don't think she's got the background.
That's what I was saying.
To pass the what if the president dies test. And by the way, he would be the oldest president ever, probably. I don't see where that's a good idea, but you can see how they lust after it. Look at Kamala Harris, who's a front runner. She's in the top three or four in most people's lists. She's a senator from California. Most people in the country don't know who she is. She is viable because she's been a prosecutor, so she comes across as being credible. And she's been attorney general, I think, of California, and she's black, but doesn't look it. So she's covering all the bases. And she's a powerful candidate for that reason. Beto O'Rourke can raise money like a mad dog, but they're not sure about him because he's white. Can a white male be the guy? And how many white males can be in the race in a year in which it's certainly got to be a woman? And it can't be an old woman like Elizabeth Warren who's pretended to be a minority. There's just so many factors to deal with.
Elizabeth Warren.
All right, I'm sorry. Hold on. We got to take a break. News. Michael Harrison is here. We'll talk more coming up on WTIC. Yes, indeed. It's Friday. Michael Harrison is here. We weren't sure if he was going to make it, but he has, for which we are thankful. All right, I want to play something for you, Michael. You ready?
I'm all set.
See if you recognize this accent in your heightened state of awareness that you're in today.
The time for the mass and easy availability of these weapons must end. And today, they will.
That is who,
that
Michael?
That is the Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Yes.
Who has become a world-famous Prime Minister overnight. Her name is Jacinda Ardern. Am I correct? Ardern. And that is a New Zealand accent, which
isn't
is very
something?
Exotic. It's a blend of sort of strine, which is the way Australians pronounce their accent. Strine.
Yep.
I speak strine, mate. And a little bit of that British is in it, but nobody from New Zealand or Australia will admit to sounding British.
Oh, really? Well, that's obviously
deal.
The basis of it. Anyway, she's being celebrated for having acted decisively to within a week of the terror incident to have banned guns. And I just
assault
find this,
weapons.
Yeah, well, they're guns.
Yeah, but she hasn't banned all guns. She's
no,
banned
not all
assault
guns.
Weapons.
Certain
very important
guns.
Point. Yes.
Certain guns and certain accessories and things like that. But I just find it amazing, the coverage, which is celebrating her ability to act like a dictator. The fact that people's rights to own something aren't protected in some way that goes beyond a week of dictator-like behavior in response to a mob
reaction. Without getting too much into the gun control issue, which I like not talking about, you bring up an interesting point, and my reaction to that is twofold. One reaction to that is, isn't it interesting how we all have this impulse to celebrate dictators when they act decisively in doing something we agree with?
Yes.
That's a scary thing.
I just think it's fascinating because we hear every day about how there's something demented about Donald Trump because he finds that same dynamic appealing.
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good. It's a scary thing.
It's just the hypocrisy of the people making the accusation, and they don't even realize it. They're like playing violins on the American newscasts where they talk about how quickly and wonderfully she acted.
Okay, yes, there is an example of seeking victory as opposed to truth. The truth is a democratic process, the Constitution, et cetera, et cetera.
And the protections of the Bill of Rights.
Now, let me point out something. Let me just point out something that you have to take into account, that even though they speak some kind of a strange form of English in New Zealand, and I say that in a little bit of jest, so anybody who's a New Zealander out there who's insulted, I apologize in advance of your emails.
Oh, stop. You don't have to apologize.
Yeah. So I'm just, you get eggs thrown at you
just
for whatever
insult
you say.
Them. Go ahead.
And
Michael
okay.
Harrison hates people from New Zealand.
No,
let's
no.
Let's just get it done.
I'm Todd Feinberg. He's Michael. No, he's Michael Harrison. Okay. The other thing is, though, that their culture is, even though they speak English, sometimes we in America think that because other countries speak English, that their culture is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that they are foreigners too.
Mm-hmm.
That they are just as foreign as if they spoke Spanish or French or Italian or Chinese. And New Zealand is a pretty exotic, contained, different culture than we are. And so, therefore, you have to judge it through their eyes as opposed to our eyes, which are based on seeing things at least to some degree to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the independence and the rugged individualism that makes up the American nature.
Yes, I agree, but I don't care. What I care about is how it influences us. I don't care about their culture or how it, it's mildly intriguing that part of the reason they're able to do this is because they already have such constricted gun rights, that they're
exactly.
so strictly monitored and controlled.
And they don't mind that. They
yeah,
don't
well, that's,
mind.
That's fine.
Yes, that's their culture.
That's them. Yeah, and it's an important thing to point out for those people who like to point and say, oh, look how dumb we are. Everybody in Europe does this, or all the Scandinavian countries. Well, we're not them culturally. We have
right.
a whole different culture. We have a whole different philosophy. And by the way, we have a constitution which has modeled liberty in a way that has changed the world.
Yeah.
So we don't go running around looking for non-liberty-based societies to copy.
Okay, well, let me take it up one notch, and that is to say, this is why we must study history. You know, anybody, the great saying, and I'm paraphrasing a great quote, anybody who only knows their own generation remains a child all their life. You have to know history.
You have to know, so that you can know how much you're victimized by your own present by your own history.
Exactly. And how to make choices for the future based upon answers that already exist. They just not in this pop bubble culture that we live in today, where anything that's before my time, man, I don't know. I don't even have to. It's not pertinent.
You know,
how does that relate to my life?
My wife, Rosalie, she's a clothes hound, and she keeps everything because she says there's never a new idea. They just keep recycling what happened 20 years ago, 15 years ago, what have you. So she keeps all her stuff, and then sometime it comes into fashion again. And the same is true with everything. Every idea, every good or bad dynamic, those are all things that have...
What goes around comes around.
Absolutely.
Everything old that's new again. You know,
there's
the term retro.
Precedent.
Hey, man, that's retro. It goes from being hip and progressive to mainstream to passé to retro to hip and progressive again. It's a cycle.
So
nothing's inherently hip. You understand that? It all has to do with the times
the popular
brainwashing. Nothing is inherently hip. When we look at old fashions, you go, oh, look how old fashioned that is. If suddenly it's back in fashion, hey, that's kind of hip.
Depends on who's doing it.
I remember
the first time, you know how actors started? I don't know. It might have been 7 or 8 years ago. I saw somebody on the Today Show and his hair looked like he had just woken up. But not accidentally with mousse and gel in it. And I thought, what is wrong with this guy? He was a big star. I don't remember which one it was.
Right.
And that's how they've been wearing their hair since. You know, carefully coiffed to look like they just got out of bed.
Right.
How did that happen? I don't even know.
Well, everything looks funny when you're not in the moment. The only people that look cool in old photos are the people that were uncool when the photo was taken.
That's
ones
true.
That are wearing the traditional classics.
That's true.
If you look at photos of the time, the ones that were the hippest ones are the ones that look the silliest. Nothing looks as silly as watching game show hosts from shows in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, with the big bushy...
Oh, my God, with the hair and the yellow jackets and the ties with flowers. And
that
was so mod.
Those sideburns.
It was called mod. It was post-mod.
Yes.
It was 60s turning into the 70s.
How about Nehru jackets? Were they
uncool? They were big for 5 seconds.
Less, I think. Four.
Actually, you're right. I'm looking at my measurement chart here. 4.2 seconds. Yeah, let's round it off to four. That was and beads. Men were wearing beads. Man, you get photographed in that at that 4.2 seconds of hipness for the rest of your life. You're a geek.
All right. There's this guy named Mayor Pete. How do you say his last name?
Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. That's it.
Buttigieg or Buttigieg.
And why do we care about this guy?
He's fantastic.
Stop.
He's a fantastic human being.
You're serious? And he's in politics?
He is a historic figure in the nascence of his ascent.
I think you're mocking.
No.
Okay. You're serious.
Okay. Because I have a sarcasm in me and I kid around a lot, all you have to do is say, are you kidding? And I will tell you the truth. I am not kidding. I'm being a little dramatic.
Why such drama?
He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, which is a sizable city. He's 37 years old. He's gay and he's married to a man.
Okay.
Okay, he's got everything going against him to be president.
No, he could get the Democratic nomination.
He could get the Republican nomination. Would you vote for Kennedy or would you vote for Nixon if they were running today and you were this old and this wise? Answer it.
It's Nixon,
probably. It's a rhetorical question. A great person of character and intellect. It doesn't matter if they're progressive or conservative. It didn't matter if they were a Democrat or Republican when we were living in a finer time or a more honest time.
Wait, you think Jack Kennedy won because he was a fine person of character, not because he was the fashion of the moment?
I think that that's a complicated subject. And I think that Kennedy was a man of his time the way Trump is a man of his time. I think that horrible people can do great things and great people can do horrible things. I think that men of character can screw up an operation. And I think people of lacking in character can rise to the occasion and save the world. I think it works in funny ways. And you got to really have an open mind.
Well, I agree with all that.
Okay, so in the case of Pete... Buttigieg.
Yeah.
I made fun of his name on this station but a week ago. I lose track of what days I'm on, but I remember that, oh, how do we pronounce his name? And I think it was either filling in for you or filling
in for
Jim. All right,
forget about
Jim.
That. Tell us about him.
Well, I've only I've only seen him speak a couple of times, and I went into it going, who's this? Who's this nerd? Who's this dork? And I stopped in my tracks, and I got that little, I have this little sensor in me that goes, bing, 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 bing. Take this guy seriously. This is something special.
Because of what?
His presence, his attitude, his intellect, his articulateness, his approach to issues and problems that don't fall into some type of talking point, cookie cutter, black or white
ideology.
So you
think this guy's got an unusual, he's like a Michael Jordan. He walks on the court and you know he's got something special.
Bingo. I might be disappointed. I don't know enough about him. I'm telling you my gut reaction.
Interesting.
Is this guy is going to be a superstar, unless I'm proven wrong, at which point I'll admit it. I don't have my ego attached into this. I'm not a fan
of
his.
No, it's just fun. It's like you're telling me that an album is going to go to number one. And you've,
exactly. You know, exactly.
It just came out this morning, and you've heard the first few seconds.
My gut tells me this guy is special. I'm not saying he's going to win the presidency, but what I think is going to happen is that this clown car of Democratic yahoos is going to whittle down very quickly.
Oh, sure.
And it's going to be about 5 or 10, and he's going to be among the top. I think he's going to, and I think if nothing else, he is going to be a major icon in the youth movement, in the gay movement, in the progressive movement. That's the kind of guy they need. Not AOC, not people with half-baked
ideas.
Well, what's the difference?
What's the difference?
Because if he were president, I would be confident if he turns out to be what he seems, regardless of whether he's a Democrat or Republican, and that's the way it should be. The differences should not be so profoundly extreme that we can't have a president that represents the country, understanding that there are different points of view.
You want somebody who is so right for the job that they transcend the political arguments
that's
of the
moment.
That's
what we need.
All right, that's Michael Harrison. He's a little charged up, and I like it. Whatever you did today, Michael, I want every week. All right? We're going to pause, and we'll continue on WTIC.
The core of the city, it's got this energy, this life to it. And my hope is people can realize that there's a lot of other Midwestern communities like that. We're not all looking backwards. It's not all about nostalgia for us. We believe in our future. But that means letting go of some of the things in the past that are not going to come back.
That's Pete Buttigieg. He's got a nice voice.
He's got a nice way. He's Kennedy-esque. He said something very interesting. He says he's very concerned with what goes on in politics now because, and then he cited some year 2050. He says, I'll be the same age as Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And that's an eye opener when you stop and think about it that, you know, a lot of old candidates, and I believe in wisdom and I believe in experience, but I can understand why young people would be worried about how the policies of the moment are going to affect the next 20 years, 30 years.
Sure,
which sometimes 70-year-olds don't think about.
You know, I think the ideal is that you want somebody who can average everything together because
of course
what has been needs to be protected. You can't have change going on so fast. Young people only understand things from their own perspective.
Yeah,
older
yeah.
people have a shot at being able to understand the whole scope.
For a 37-year-old coming from me, who's kind of old enough to be his father,
grandfather,
actually great grandfather. I believe that this guy's got a philosophical approach that just rings the bell for me. And again, I'm not saying I'd vote for him. I'm not saying I'm for him. I'm not saying he'll win.
No, you're observing a cultural moment. It's very interesting.
I like him.
What's interesting about politics right now, presidential politics in particular, is that it is popular culture. It's not about older guys who've been working within the system anymore. Everybody wants to blow up the system. Everybody wants a pop star or rock star to step on the scene and woo them. And there's something childish and irresponsible about it, but there's also something irresponsible about choosing anybody for a big position of power. They're all dangerous.
Of course. And anybody that wants to be president is dangerous by the virtue of them wanting it. You pointed that out eloquently earlier in the program when you talked about the power and the ego and the little flicker of light between them and the presidency and what they would do to get through that little flicker of a space. Anything. And that's what's going on. I believe anybody who wants to be president shouldn't be allowed to be president. They should be drafted.
It worked at the beginning, right?
That's the way it was meant to be. It wasn't meant to be a career. It was meant to be public service that you left your business, your family.
You were bringing your wisdom from a long and busy and varied life to serve your country for some period of time. And it was considered gauche to go out and campaign.
Not even for president, for mayor, for senate, for any of these jobs. That's the whole reason they have part-time legislatures and part-time pay and all of these things is to dissuade the career politician, the insider, the person who then gets in cahoots with the other insiders. Then you add the campaign finance structure that we have to that and you have a toxic stew.
All right, speaking of Stu, Mueller report, front page of the Drudge Report today is the headline today with a question mark. All day it's been there, and so far no report.
It's, you talk about setting up people for some type of a drama. This guy Mueller is better at it than Trump. It's like, wow, how the hell did Mueller pull this off? 2 years, no leaks, hermetically sealed office.
He took everybody's cell phones away.
He threatened their lives. Can you imagine what a boss he must be? I mean, this guy.
Yeah, but I also suspect anyone working there knows what the deal is and has been around the block and has proven their ability to keep secrets.
Well, why can't a president do that?
Well, because he's got spies in there trying to destroy him since the day he won.
Yeah, I'm saying a president. I'm not saying the president.
No,
in today's day and age, it's impossible to run anything with more than one person involved and know that you're going to keep it secret.
But especially the government is thousands and thousands of people, most of whom have been there for a long time.
So the point of the Mueller thing as we come to the final seconds of our get together is that the drama is intense. You can cut the air with a knife. And in Washington, D.C., they're all walking around on eggshells with the great fear that it's going to be a dud.
Yeah, sure. I don't feel like the rest of the country is on eggshells. I don't feel like we're on eggshells. I'm not on eggshells. I don't even think this is the big thing for Trump. I think the big thing for Trump is the Southern District of New York and the investigations into his business.
With a couple of minutes left before the news,
not even that long.
You make a provocative point.
Michael Harrison, great to talk with you. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.